Hey, everybody. What's going on? It's Sunday. We're sitting around drinking
some of that
pumpkin chai porter.
Yeah, it's that O'Fallon.
And talk about
O'Fallon. O'Fallon fake Irish stuff.
O'Fallon, O'Fallic.
Yeah, this shit's fucking Yankee as hell. Fucking, it's good, though.
This is good, actually. I like it.
It's good. Mm-hmm. It tastes like chai tea. It tastes like almost Indian chai tea with...
But also beer.
With a little bit of pumpkin, and it's beer.
Yeah. Yeah, we got an ABC. We got that for our Friday night sidetrack show where we had all the... We were just discussing, like, what theme the liquor or the beer for the next show is going to be, but we'll figure it out.
Y'all seem to like the southern stuff. You know, that's the regional culture we can fucking sell to you guys. Maybe we'll do some moonshine or something.
Because actually, that apple pie moonshine that we got, that was delightful.
I want some more of that.
And I just kind of like found it accidentally because it was just in the little like sample bin at the front of the by the
that moonshine was
cash register. It was actually very good. I mean, it'd knock you on your ass if you drank like a whole bunch of it because it was really strong.
And it came in a little jar.
It was a little bitty jar. I love it. So apparently, you guys have been waiting for us to do Elvis for a really long time. Yeah. I remember seeing the trailer for this a while back. And I was kind of like, man, that looks pretty cool. I like want to go see that because I really like Baz Luhrmann. And it's the thing about it is you either love Baz Luhrmann or you don't because his style, it's a lot. You know what I mean? It's a lot. Yeah. It's very blingy. It's very flashy. It's very sugary. It's very over the top. But if you like that kind of thing, then it's just, you know what I mean? I mean, I'm a big fan. Well, you're a big fan of his Romeo and Juliet.
Yeah.
And I also really like that. I'm also a big fan of Moulin Rouge. So I was like really, really excited to see this. And we watched it last night. I think it's still in a couple of theaters. You know, just maybe like, you know, the cheap theaters and stuff like that. But we actually saw that it was on HBO Max, which I have. So we watched it on there last night because I've been like, come on, I've been wanting to see this. So at first Tom was like, I don't know if I'm in the... And then he was like, ah, fuck it. Let's watch it.
Yeah.
And it ended up, even though it was 2.5 hours long, 2 hours and 40 minutes, something like that, it really didn't seem that long to me.
No, it goes by fast.
I got like really invested in it, you know?
Yeah.
I ended up really liking it a lot.
I wouldn't call myself an Elvis expert. When I was a kid growing up, they had Elvis experts that knew everything that was true about Elvis and everything that was false about Elvis. They even knew all the lies and legends. They knew everything. And they just fucking worship Elvis. You know, it was usually women. And they would read fucking Elvis fan fiction and shit. This was like from my dad's generation. They were like that. They were like the people that... those would be like the chicks that would fucking be into Orion and actually thought that maybe somehow the fucking spirit of Elvis had possessed this other guy from Mississippi. Sound just like him. Okay. Just like Elvis. Wore a mask. Wasn't him, though. When he took that mask off, all the fucking mystique went away. But he sounded just like him. But I just grew up with it. Elvis was originally from Tupelo, Mississippi, which is probably about 80 miles maybe from Heidelberg, where my family's from. Heidelberg Laurel area, which is like in Jones County. It was a wild county. There's a fucking movie about it called The Free State of Jones, and it's still called The Free State of Jones. It fought the Confederacy and the Union. But, Elvis... I know the culture, even though I didn't live during his time. He died when I was a kid, right around when Star Wars came out. I remember when it happened. My mom's friend Yvonne, and this is when we were living in California. My mom's friend Yvonne fucking came running up to the house. She was crying. I remember seeing it. She was crying. She was in her 20s. And my mother was like, what's wrong? What's wrong? What's wrong? And she goes, Elvis died. She's like, what? And fucking, they turned on the television and they were announcing it was like JFK being shot.
It was a big deal. I was only 5 when it happened, but I remember being on TV. I remember everybody freaking out.
Yeah, I was like, Elvis died? I knew who Elvis was.
Yeah, I did too.
I was like, I knew he died. You know, wow.
I mean, I was a little kid, but I knew.
The concept of somebody dying was even weird to me. And then after that, going back to Mississippi, basically my whole life for summers, you know, because my parents were divorced. I go back to see my dad, and I grew up in the Laurel area, Heidelberg area. And people of my dad's generation, basically, some of them almost kind of revered Elvis as a messianic figure. On par almost with Jesus. Almost. It was weird, man. It's weird. You had to be there to see it, to experience it through the eyes of somebody who really wasn't a fan, to see it, you know, to fully appreciate it. And, you know, Hollywood would make movies about it, you know, but those guys weren't there for that. They just heard about it, you know, to make a movie about Elvis freaks and shit. In Mississippi, it was fucking big deal. But probably the same up in Memphis and Tennessee, you know, in the Tennessee area, Nashville, because he actually mostly lived in that area. He moved up north. He was born in Mississippi. Listening to gospel music and stuff.
Yep.
He was kind of like the Eminem of his time. He grew up in a basically mixed neighborhood of whites and blacks. He grew up around black kids and grew up with early Mississippi Delta blues, almost prototype rock music. And he was way into that. And when he started playing playing guitar, that's what he played. And his dad was kind of an ex-con and who really couldn't help the family. And when he started coming into money, it's one of the reasons why I like this movie, is that it really explains his Southern era real well, about how he was tearing up the South first. All the clubs around the Gulf area and up in Tennessee, Nashville, excuse me, Tennessee, Kentucky area. He was just a fucking sensation. He wasn't national, he was local. And he started making more money than his dad could ever dream of, so he kind of became the alpha of the family. Wherever he went, his family would go with him. And when he went national, he just did shit that only a Southerner would do from that time. I mean, he'd go to a damn movie set and bring his whole family. Here, meet my mom, meet my dad. And that was like really uncool shit. You know, for those, even today you wouldn't do that. You couldn't do that back then, really. Bring your family to the damn.
Yeah, nowadays that would be weird too.
Like, yeah, they were like, what? Meet my mom.
And it was just like bringing your whole family to a job interview or something like that.
So they did kind of touch onto that. He kind of came off as a mama boy to a lot of people. But in Southern culture, especially old school Southern culture, he became the head of his family. So they became kind of his responsibility. It was almost very kind of like something out of Central South America. Italians would really understand that. Because they're almost kind of like Southern, old school Southern families are almost kind of like something from Southern Italy, where they're patriarchies, you're taking care of your family, you're almost like the don of your family, almost. And his crew was called the Memphis Mob. It was kind of like a mafia, but that's just very Southern. To outsiders, it's bizarre, but it makes a lot of sense when you know those cultures, when you grow up in it. I'm sure somebody from Mexico, Venezuela, Brazil, you know, I grew up in Brazil too, you know, there about 9 years. They understand that, you know, Italy, but not Northern cultures, you know what I mean? They're a lot more atomized, you know, more of an individual culture. Elvis was from the old school fucking family cultures.
Yeah, I was going to say, too, that it's like they do mention in the movie, yeah, that his dad had gone to jail, but I don't want to make it seem like his dad was some master criminal or something like that, because it was like some it was check forgery.
Yeah, yeah.
Which, you know, is illegal, obviously.
They held it over him, though.
But it's a bullshit. It's kind of a bullshit charge. It's not like he shot anybody or anything like that.
Yeah.
It was just some bullshit check forgery.
They were a poor family.
And that's when Elvis was a kid.
Yeah.
I don't think his dad went to jail again, like, later. But, yeah, they did hold it over him. Yeah. Like I said, they were, you know, his family were very poor.
Yeah.
So you go to jail once and they're, like, not going to be like, well, that's what those poor people do. Let them get away with anything.
There's a lot of Elvis movies. Some of them are real good. Each one of them kind of has its own angle. This one has its own angle, which I did like. This is from the angle of fucking Carl Parker.
Yeah.
His manager. All right. And it starts off with Parker fucking on as an old man getting ready to die. And he goes, people said I killed Elvis. I didn't kill Elvis. I created Elvis, you know. And then we were partners. And then it goes back and fucking it kind of shows fucking where Elvis came from and fucking how Colonel Parker kind of groomed him, and then how eventually, okay, I do like this movie, so don't take this the wrong way. I do like this movie, but the movie is really about Colonel Parker's financial abuse of fucking Elvis.
Villainy.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, well, the thing about it is that Elvis is obviously so large, so much larger than life, that obviously any movie that's about Elvis is going to be about Elvis. Yeah. But I kind of like that
just
they...
another take.
I kind of like that it's seen through the lens of Colonel Parker, because I don't think that's really been done before.
Never been done before.
And I kind of feel like, you know, the Colonel Parker character, which, you know, played by Tom Hanks, is... clearly the villain, you know what I mean? They're not trying to make you feel bad for him, or there's, I mean, he's clearly set up as the villain, but it's a really interesting perspective on Elvis, because you're seeing it from the point of view of a kind of a villainous, like, vulture type of guy.
He was predatory,
who sees himself as, I made that guy famous, and you know, and he kind of like took advantage of him a lot. I'm not saying he didn't help his career, I'm sure he did at some points, but you know, it was a complicated relationship that they had, but I really do kind of like, I thought that was a really interesting lens to see the movie through, like see it through his character.
There are three main movies that I recommend, and this is one of them. This is a good movie. The other one is the one with Kurt Russell, done by...
didn't John Carpenter
John Carpenter.
Yeah, he made an Elvis movie.
John Carpenter is like the good default movie. It's like the official story. It's just... kind of nothing but the facts. It's pretty close to what the, you know, that's what the basic story is. And the other one I like is Elvis and Nixon.
Yeah.
And that's
with Michael
about,
Shannon.
Yeah. Yeah, I like that one, because that one kind of gives you the feeling of what it would be like to hang out with Elvis and how interesting he was. He was wild, man. He goes on a secret mission to talk his way into seeing the president, and to be seen as an equal with the president, okay, and become a secret agent, all in this one fell swoop, while he's carrying a gun into the White House, all kinds of shit, while he eats the president's M&Ms, while he says, yeah, you're the president, but I'm the king, you know, just, it's just bizarre. And then you end up wondering, did he really want to be a secret agent, or was, did he just want that badge? It's just not known. But you get an idea of fucking what it was like to hang out with him, at least just on that one little mission. Because the witnesses that were with him, they survived, and they said, yeah, that's it. That's what it was like. And he was a trip, man. Elvis was a fucking trip. He was kind of a proto-goth. In a way, he knew Mela Nurmi, also known as Vampira. He evidently liked, later on in the 60s, he liked Hammer horror films, and you can definitely see him and Lisa are dressed in all that fucking black velvet with the red and the black hair, and, you know, they're doing the Hammer horror vampire kind of motif in some of that stuff, that some of the photos that I've seen in him. And his decor... how he decorated stuff, is he kind of liked vampiric stuff. They said that he liked vampire movies. That's weird. You don't think of it.
I mean, that's not really weird. I mean, but vampire movies are cool.
Yeah, but he loved gospel music. That was really, you know, I didn't really like Elvis's music that much. I thought he was a great singer. But he really liked gospel. And I don't really like gospel. But I liked Elvis. Elvis was fucking interesting guy. Weird. But in many ways, average kind of Southern guy of his generation, really.
Yeah, well, and the thing about Elvis and Nixon is that it's not, I wouldn't call that a biopic, because it's only about a very, very small...
one thing that he did.
It's one thing that he did, like, one very, like, period of time. Whereas this is a biopic, but because it's Baz Luhrmann, he takes a lot of artistic license.
Yeah.
Now, a lot of the stuff that happens in here is... kind of close approximation of what happened. He did embellish some things. He does kind of like skim over some things, you know, because it seems that he had like particular you know, proclivities or things that he wanted to focus on, which is fine. Because like I said, it's he just took creative license with the story. Some of it, like I said, is exaggerated, but not that much. You know what I mean? It's just kind of like, oh, it happened like that, but not exactly. Or they took a couple different events and like smushed them together or something like that. I don't think there's anything in there that's just completely made up, at least as far as I could determine. But some things are kind of like shifted around and stuff. But that said, it's like, even though, as I said, it's 2.5 hours and some stuff is just skimmed over and some stuff, but I do think that it got, the thing I like about this movie is that it really kind of like captured the essence of Elvis. Even if it wasn't, even if some of the stuff that happened wasn't exactly true, it's like, I don't know, it's just very like myth making, which I think was very much part of the whole
Elvis thing. Yeah.
So I think that was like a really good way to go about it. And can we talk a little bit about Austin Butler? Because fuck, did he get the Oscar? Did he get nominated?
I don't know.
He totally should have, because
he got the dance moves and the voice.
I was watching this movie, and like halfway through the movie, I realized that I had forgotten that I was watching an actor playing Elvis.
Yeah.
And that's always a good sign, because that hardly ever happens.
Yeah.
That hardly ever happens.
He got the dance moves down and the voice. And just, he looks pretty close to the way Elvis looked. He did a great job. A lot better than what's his name from Elvis and Nixon. That doesn't look like Elvis.
Michael Shannon. Yeah, well, like I said,
but he does a great Elvis.
Yeah,
he does a great Elvis.
And he was pretty aware when he was cast. He's like, I don't look anything like Elvis. They're like, we don't. That doesn't matter. We just want like the essence of Elvis.
Yep.
And this one, I think they not only nailed the essence of Elvis, but they also got the look of Elvis.
Yeah.
That dude. It's weird because they actually show like some actual footage of Elvis at the end.
It's hard to tell.
And it's almost kind of like hard to tell him apart, or when he looks different.
Yeah.
You know, like the last scene where they showed him, where they showed actual Elvis, like singing at the piano, like in the close up. For a second, I thought that it was a recreation, because actually they did recreate a lot of his shows like pretty closely. And sometimes you couldn't tell.
No, they blended in real footage.
When it was footage and when it was the guy, because it's just kind of like Austin Butler just, he really like embodied that role. You never ever get the sense that he's doing an Elvis impersonation or a shtick or anything. Like, he comes across like a real person.
They got a scene where Elvis is down in, I think it's in Memphis. It's either Memphis or Nashville, and he's hanging out with B.B. King. And B.B. King, they're in the club. And B.B. King's telling him that, man, you should do whatever the hell you want to do, because you're making too much money. They'll never, you know, they'll never come after a white dude making as much money as you. You can do whatever you want. Because Colonel Parker was trying to make him stop dancing like that.
Which isn't exactly true, but I don't think it's true, right. I'll get into that a little bit.
Yeah,
it wasn't so much Colonel Parker doing it. Yeah. I don't know. I'll get into it, like I said.
And then during that scene, playing in the background is a dude doing Little Richard, and that dude fucking is great. And he was
like at one scene, but I was like, oh my God, that dude's
just
amazing.
Like Little Richard, yeah.
He was great.
Yeah.
I don't know what that actor's name is, but he was playing Little Richard.
Yeah, that's
he was fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah, he really, really he nailed it.
I would like to see more of that.
Yeah, they should, now that's the next movie Baz Luhrmann should make. Right. He should make a movie about Little Richard with that guy.
Little Richard was fucking brave as shit. That dude, he was out. For that time, he was out. Yeah. But anyway, after that scene, they started to go down a path that I had never heard of. That's probably what Jenny's talking about. They basically make it seem like Elvis got drafted because he wouldn't stop singing that, because he wouldn't stop dancing that way. And I don't think that's true. I think he got drafted like anybody else and didn't try to get out of it like other guys who had a lot of money would have gotten out of it. I don't think they drafted him as punishment.
I don't think so either. No. Like, yeah, they didn't exactly say that in the movie, almost kind of made it seem like that. Just because the one scene, like, you see him getting arrested for, you know, wiggling, and because apparently that was illegal back then, but yeah, you know what I mean. But and then the next scene, they have a thing where it looks like, you know, he got drafted, and they're like, well, you know, he has to go, and maybe this will be a good thing, or else he's going to jail. And it's almost kind of like they were implying, you know, it's either go to jail for the wiggling or join the army. But like I said, he got drafted anyway.
Yeah,
I actually think they were gonna give him a more cushy position, but he said no, that he was going to take, like, the...
That's what I always
just wanted
heard.
To be a normal...
He wanted to be a normal
that's
dude.
What I heard, too.
And that they actually, they see, that's a big part of Southern culture is doing service. He's not going to dodge out on that. And they made it kind of look like he cried over having to go. He didn't want to leave his mom. That's not true either.
Although his mom did die while he was over
yeah,
there.
Yeah, and that is I think true. I think he brought her to Germany with him for a little while, didn't he?
I don't think so. She, okay. Well, maybe.
I thought she...
They don't really show that in the movie, but she did die, like, I think she died in 1958.
Yeah.
And he actually did get leave, obviously, like, when she died, and he came home for, like, for the funeral.
But Elvis, people were... When Elvis went into the army, they showed him getting his hair cut, and, like, his haters were like, oh, man, that must suck for him. But he was happy to be there, and he wanted to be... in combat arms, and they made him a tanker. And he was a model soldier and ended up making E5 sergeant. I think he was a tank driver, I think. Or, maybe he ended up being a commander. I'm not sure. I think he was a driver. And they failed to mention that he met Lisa Marie there, and that was his commanding general's daughter.
They kind of glide over this in the movie, but she was only 14.
Yeah, she was young.
When he met her. In the movie, they actually make it seem like they're kind of the same age.
No, she
that was not the case.
Yeah.
He was 23, I believe, she was 14.
That was normal back then. If you had the dad's permission, you could date at like 14, 15, I think.
Let them see each other. Yeah. I don't think they let them really hang out. Like, after, like, once she turned, like, 17, I think they were like, okay, you can, like, go kind of, like, on dates and shit.
She was a fan. So she asked her dad to see him.
Yeah.
And they were hanging out. And if you've ever seen any photos of Lisa Marie, she's probably one of the best-looking women that have ever been born. She was fucking gorgeous. And they were quite a couple. You know, he was just as good-looking as her. But no, dad said it was cool.
Oh, yeah. We keep saying Lisa Marie Priscilla.
Priscilla. So, sorry.
Lisa Marie's the daughter.
I get it confused. Priscilla. Priscilla's gorgeous. Lisa Marie looked a little bit like Priscilla, though. He looked like her dad, though, too. Lisa Marie's cute. Real cute. Priscilla, that's right. Yeah, he just called her Scylla, I think, didn't he?
Yeah.
Scylla, yeah. Anyway, the... So they left that out. And when he comes back, his career was bigger than ever when he came back. I think he did pretty well. They made it sound like he came back... And his career fizzled, but that's not how I remembered it. I remember he made some movies and did a bunch of shit when he got out of the army and made a whole bunch of money. Built Graceland up and.
Well, I kind of feel
it was
like
fun being Elvis. I mean, Elvis didn't have a bad life. He had a fucking great life. I mean, he was his career did start to fucking take a nosedive in some ways over time because. He became a commercial product. He wasn't really rebellious anymore. There wasn't really anything all that. They made him sound really shocking and shit. And he probably was when he first appeared. But by the time the 60s had come around, Elvis was fucking tame compared to what was going on, you know?
Well, that's why what I was just going to say was that when the 60s came around, he went more in a movie, like movie actor direction rather than music. But all of the stuff about him getting threatened with like arrest and stuff like that for all the hip wiggling and all of the controversy that he caused, like with all of his, you know, black moves and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Most of that is true. Now, the one scene that they have in this, which is a great scene, actually, where he they tell him it's like, oh, you have to like... tone it all down or you're gonna get arrested, like no hip wiggling, no doing nothing. And then he decides fuck this shit and he goes out there and sings that evil song, you know what I mean? And he's like just shaking his fucking hips all over the place and then he gets arrested. Now that actual thing didn't happen, but they said that's actually like a compilation of like two or three different concerts where that actually did happen. Like one of them happened in Florida and I think there was like another one where he did actually get threatened. They're like, you can't do that hip shaking thing or we're gonna like put you in jail. So it's not like I said, it's just an exaggeration and they kind of like took a bunch of different events and like kind of glommed them into one thing. But he totally was in the 50s particularly, he was totally shocking for then because not only because of the kind of very overt, like, sexuality that he was, which wasn't really a thing that you did, but also because he was doing quote-unquote black music, or at least, like, what old white people perceived as black music. Like, yeah. You know what I mean? It was just so they were kind of...
It wasn't really black music. Well, it was the new wave of music, and there was blacks and whites doing it. It's just that black people had been doing it first.
Yeah.
With Delta blues, and they were just making it harder and called it rhythm and blues, and then it started to become rock. Rock and roll.
The interesting thing about it, though, is, like, in this movie, they kind of make it seem as though, like I said, that because of all this rebelliousness and everything like that, like, Colonel Parker was afraid that, you know, his cash cow was going to dry up or whatever. So he said, maybe we should do more family-friendly Elvis. And when he was on TV, like, they made him, like, wear the, you know, the tuxedo and, like, the dog and everything like that. That did happen, where they made him put on the tuxedo and, like, sing to the dog. But that was not actually Colonel Parker's idea. That was Steve Allen's idea, who was the host of the show. That was his idea because he wasn't a big fan of rock and roll, so he just thought it would be funny, I guess. But the thing about it was that, at least from what I heard, that Colonel Parker and Elvis actually were saying maybe they should tone down his image or make him more family-friendly because they thought that by the time he got back from the Army, that rock and roll would be passé. Little did they know.
Yeah.
But they didn't know, like, at the time. They were just kind of like, they thought it was just kind of like a fad or like flash in the pan.
They didn't know how far that was going to
Right. evolve. They didn't realize that. They were just kind of like, well, maybe we should start, like, changing direction. Like, when I get back, I'll be more kind of, like, clean cut or whatever. But then, like, you know,
they had not seen the Rolling Stones yet.
I guess not.
And the Beatles and the Rolling Stones fucking changed that. That changed the game. Elvis didn't really like that, actually. I think that's part of the reason why he wanted to go more gospel. He didn't like, Elvis didn't like anything that was, like, real hard. Like, hard rock, he didn't like it. Like, he didn't like Jimi Hendrix or what they call acid rock. He called that drug music, you know, what do you call it?
Which is ironic, really, considering what
Elvis was addicted
to
a lot of pills and shit.
But that's the thing. Like, even people back then, like, you know, you could be a 50s housewife and pop uppers all day long, but then you could, on the other side of your face, you could rail about all those dirty hippies and their acid. And I'm like, aren't you on drugs, too, though? Yeah. It's like, no difference.
I got a feeling that Elvis smoked weed, though, anyway.
Probably. Because
weed was around. We was around in Mississippi.
In this, they kind of go into that a little bit. Like, they do kind of go into how upset he was at Martin Luther King and Robert Kennedy and stuff like that getting assassinated, which he was. It happened, like, in slightly different timeline than they show in the movie, but it's, you know, not that big a deal. But I do kind of feel like they don't really get too much into how he didn't really like all the 60s music that was coming out so much because he... you know, there's a scene where he kind of approaches who Colonel Parker thinks of as, like, hippies that are, like, at the TV station to kind of, like, kind of go more in his own direction because he feels like Colonel Parker is, like, you know, has his, you know, foot on his neck or whatever, like, too much. And he wants to kind of go back to his roots and kind of do his own thing. And Colonel Parker, like, kind of castigates him for, like, hanging out with all those hippies and radicals and shit like that. But they, like I said, they don't really go into... I feel like Elvis and Nixon goes more into...
Yeah, into what he...
Into how much Elvis didn't really like that 60s counterculture
thing. Yeah, Elvis's politics. See, the thing I liked about Elvis and Nixon is that they showed actually how... traditional, how patriotic Elvis was. He was very mission-oriented. He was very much kind of like a uniter. He would sing songs that would have the battle hymn of the Republic and fucking Dixie in the same song. And he's trying to merge North and South and black and white and trying to get everybody to come together to save the country. Because from Elvis's point of view, it's the 60s, it's flying apart. He thinks the Union's going to break apart into a big civil war, basically. That's what he's imagining. And it was kind of a civil war of a type. It's just it wasn't catastrophic.
Well, a lot of people thought that.
A lot of people thought. He thought the Soviet Union was behind it. He thought the Soviet Union was shipping in a bunch of mind-altering drugs like LSD and stuff. He thought that maybe the Rolling Stones and the Beatles maybe were Soviet sympathizers and that maybe they were, at least maybe, according to that movie. It's hard to say. but he didn't. He,
yeah, that might have been slightly exaggerated, too.
Or he might have told Nixon that because he was trying to get a one-up on his competition, too. You know, it might have been Brown knows it. It's hard to say. It's hard to say what Elvis thought. Elvis was an intelligent guy, very gifted, but he's very much a Southern man of his time. And he was... He was a conservative. He was not a radical. He was a conservative. It's just that it was his version of conservatism. He was trying to keep America together. He wasn't trying to... He didn't want to let it be blown apart into a revolution.
Well, I think in his early days, he was maybe seen as more subversive because of his embrace of... Yeah. "Quote unquote black music,"
right.
And introducing that to a white teenage audience, which a lot of people, you know, back then, like parents and stuff, did not like.
Yeah.
So they saw that as particularly subversive.
But that was him, normal for Elvis.
Yeah, that's what I mean. For him, it really didn't seem like he wasn't doing it on purpose. He was just he grew up in that area. He grew up in a very poor part of Mississippi. He grew up hearing black gospel music and Delta blues and things like that, and he was just doing what he liked.
Yeah, this is just good Southern music from good people, and he's trying to play it for everybody. That's what he liked. And other people liked it too, or he would have failed. So, yeah. It was just about quality. And he sang in black churches and did a lot of gospel. He actually liked gospel, personally.
Yeah, that's kind of what... And they kind of go into that in this movie, too. Like, after, like, once the 60s came along, he kind of wants to go back in that direction because he said that's the music that made him happy.
Yeah.
So he kind of wants to go... But he kind of does his own spin on it, obviously, but that's kind of what he wanted to go back
to. Yeah, his later stuff from the 60s and 70s is all gospel.
Yeah.
And really, even though, man, life as a Vegas singer... really beat him down. And
Somebody mentioned earlier that he did something like 700 something shows, like, and they do show that in this because it does seem like, and the movie portrays this, like I said, they exaggerate some things about it, but he did actually kind of a little bit get talked into / shafted into doing these performances at that place in Vegas, the International or whatever it was called. And what it was, I don't know if they said this in the movie, but it was a 1 month engagement, like every year. So I guess it was like, I don't know, it was like every night for a month or five nights away or whatever it was. So it was just kind of like every year he had to come back and do like a whole month or six weeks or whatever it was. And I don't know. And they do kind of go into this, too, because you were saying, like, before we got to this part of the movie, where you were like, I don't understand why Elvis never went, like, overseas, like, to tour.
He tried,
to Germany or Japan. Yeah. And this movie actually does go into it. And most of the stuff in there is pretty accurate, like, at least from what I could determine. Colonel Parker did not want to go overseas because he was an illegal Dutch immigrant. And he did not have a passport.
He didn't have an ID.
He didn't have an identity because he had had like a fake identity for so long. Colonel Tom Parker was not his actual name.
He was just old. He was a carny.
Yeah.
Into carnival, and just he played carny games on Elvis and Elvis's family, and they were just sitting ducks for this guy. And the South being a, like I said, and I've said it many times before, especially the old South, this was a. An honor-based society. It's not legalistic. They would do things on a handshake, or they would just write some shit out. And a dude like Parker could talk a family like that and just tie it into a pretzel. He made a little family business where he put all of Elvis's relatives in these dummy positions with impressive titles and would pay them out of Elvis's money and get them to all become loyal to each other. And the only way that this could hold together is to keep Colonel Parker in the loop. And when Elvis fired him, Parker comes back with itemized all the way from day one, everything that Elvis supposedly owed him. And on all of Elvis, he could make it look like on paper that Elvis owed him money.
Well, because I don't know if you guys know this, but Colonel Parker took 50%
of everything.
Of everything, which for a manager is unprecedented.
Yeah,
that's not something that you do.
And today, it doesn't make any sense to a modern person of today who has normal understanding of the way the laws work, but you're not. That's not what you're dealing with. You're dealing with an older Southern family. That's the thing that's so funny. He had all this fame and all this money and fortune, but really he was just a regular Southern dude from a small town. You could bamboozle Elvis.
Well, he'd grown up poor. He wasn't dumb.
He didn't know how to do it.
But he didn't have any experience with anything like that. I mean, I'm not shitting. It's like, I don't either. I grew up poor too. I wouldn't know what to do if I won like millions.
You could have brought in a Hollywood lawyer or a fucking lawyer from New York would have walked all over Parker. All right. And Parker would just would have been set down the road with nothing. All right.
But they never did that. Well, because I kind of feel like at first, like Colonel Parker was so effective in like weaseling his way into their good graces that I kind of feel like Elvis almost kind of felt bad. Like he didn't want to like tell him to fucking take a walk. Yeah. I mean, it really took a lot before.
Well, yeah, it was emotion. He had him by emotion.
And I think that he didn't want to think that this guy that he knew forever was like, that he would betray him. Right. So I kind of feel like he just played on that weakness.
Right.
Now, another thing that they showed in the movie is not entirely accurate. Now, Colonel Parker was a carny. That's true. But by the when he met Elvis, because I think in the movie they kind of showed him still kind of being a carny or like meeting Elvis like before he actually met him. When he met him, I think it was 1955, and I think he was already, like, a talent promoter at that time. Like, he was already promoted. Like, at Hank Snow, they do go into that in the movie, and a couple of other kind of, like, country western kind of people. And then he just kind of heard about Elvis, like, from, because he was on Sun Records then, which is, like, a regional label. So he heard about him then. And he's like, oh my God, like this guy's amazing. So we need to get in on this. And the thing about it was that they kind of show in the movie that, you know, they put Elvis on the Hank Snow show. It was kind of like this country thing. They went around and played fairs and stuff. That's true. That did happen. But they kind of show in the movie that Hank Snow was just kind of like, oh, I don't like this wiggling nonsense or anything like that. It didn't seem like Hank really bothered with that. He was just kind of like, hey, man, they love this kid. So, man, let's close the show out with him. He's making all this money. So he didn't have a problem at all. Like, he wasn't scandalized or anything like that. And actually, for a while, early on in his career, Hank Snow and Colonel Parker, like, actually co-managed Elvis, like, for a little while. So there was that, too. Because I kind of feel like they made Hank Snow be just like, oh, my goodness. And he's like, he wasn't that bad. You know what I mean? Like, he thought Elvis was great. He wasn't, like, pissed off that he was, like, stealing his spotlight or whatever the hell.
Yeah, one of the things I was going to say before, but never got around to it, was Elvis really wanted to do gospel. And towards the end of his, towards the end of his career, he was really starting to get beaten down. I don't think his morale was real good, and I have a theory based on what his complaints were. He thought there was something wrong with him. I have a theory of what happened to Elvis medically. Okay.
We all know what you're gonna say.
Yeah. Okay. Anyway, if you listen to Elvis in his final months, some of his last performances, he sounded fucking great. Even though he's definitely in bad health. He was starting to sound like Luciano Pavarotti.
Yeah.
He was sounding like an opera. So getting fat actually improved his voice quite a bit. And he didn't really improve him as a Vegas entertainer. He wasn't really the kind of guy that you went up on stage, you know, fucking, you know, entertaining the women. But he was fucking a great vocalist his whole life.
Yeah. And he never lost that. It seemed like even in his worst health at the end, when they were kind of like just shooting him up with drugs, which they kind of do show in this movie, and this is kind of fucked up. There's like, because there's one scene where, you know, he collapses like in the hallway. Like, this is during the Vegas years.
Yeah.
And he collapses in the hallway and he's just like losing it. And Colonel Parker's like, you know, shoot him up with something because we get that man on the stage. And then they ask his dad, who is his business manager. Now, I was going to say, too, that whole Elvis Presley Enterprises, that company wasn't formed until after he died.
Yeah.
It was Colonel Parker and Priscilla and stuff. They were managing his estate, like in merch and stuff after he died. But his dad actually was his business manager. So they asked the dad, hey, is this okay, or should we take him to the hospital? And he's just like, no, get him up and
Yeah.
You know, they're just trying to show that, like, his dad was... I don't know if that's true or not, but there is, like, a scene in there where that happens. So it really does seem like... I don't know. Like, it's... The biopic, it's a really interesting thing because it's just so... It's so fizzy and so over the top and just, like, so kinetic. And it's just, like, really fast-paced and, like, it's really, really beautiful to look at and covers a lot of, like, ground. But then it's also kind of, like, a tragedy because it's seen through... You're seeing it through the eyes of Colonel Parker, who kind of fucked him over. I mean, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And you could argue that maybe he wouldn't have gotten as famous without Colonel Parker. I kind of doubt that. I think he probably would have been famous anyway, just because he was so, you know, he just had that star quality. I think someone else would have discovered him if Colonel Parker hadn't come along.
He needed much better management.
But I think he definitely needed much better management because honestly, like Colonel Parker, he just knew a chicken that he could pluck it.
Right.
And it's kind of sad. You know what I mean? It's kind of sad that he did that. And I'm not saying, like, Elvis had millions of dollars, and I'm sure he had, like, a really good time for a long time, but...
Elvis needed to be doing real tours at his age. Real world tours. To keep his ass fucking motivated. Putting him in front of real new crowds constantly. Let him play in front of Japan. He could have played Russia. All right? That's how famous he would. The Soviet Union would have let him in. They'd let him in.
He's fucking Elvis.
He'd been Elvis, right.
He could have gone anywhere he wanted to.
And
that's what's kind of sad about this movie is that they kind of show that Elvis wanted to go to all these places and do all this stuff, and it was almost kind of like Colonel Parker was like holding him back.
Yeah. If you see films in his later years of him doing these shows, some of them are in casinos. This is a religious experience for the audience. Is definitely that they can't get enough of this dude. It's kind of funny when he's really out of shape, but it's a lot more understandable when he's still looking really the part. But he could just come off the stage and get down into the middle of a fucking huge crowd of fans, and it would part like the Red Sea, and he could walk through them. There's no rock star that could do that today. No, it could never have done that in the 70s or 80s. He was literally a king. They saw him as a king. He was something else.
But like I said, I think that that's the main. I mean, as awesome, I really really liked this movie a lot. Like I said, it was a lot of fun. It's long, but it did not seem long at all. It just kind of like kept on going, and it was always something like cool to look at. But I mean, Austin Butler as Elvis was. Particularly in the scene where, like, the very early scene where he gets on stage, like, with his old band, like, before Colonel Parker has even, like, really met him or started fucking with him. And he's, like, standing there and somebody's kind of, like, heckling him from the crowd or whatever, like, hey, get a haircut, you fairy, or whatever. And then he just kind of stands there for a second, and then all of a sudden he just, like, busts out and, like, starts singing and dancing around and stuff like that. And it's, you know, it's kind of hard to, like, see from our modern day perspective. It's like, you know, what was so great about, like, the hip wiggling and everything like that. But when you see Austin Butler playing it, like, in this movie, and, like, you see, like, the way that Baz Luhrmann, like, shot all the crowd, like, reacting to him and stuff, you could totally see how that would be a thing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because the performance in this is just so... It's just, like, electrifying.
Yeah.
So you
Another thing is that he also did some of... He did a lot of Elvis's 70s moves, which Elvis did all these damn experimental fucking personal signature moves that would not fly today. Only Elvis could do that, all right, and get away with that shit. And they're kind of awkward when you see him actually doing
the kung fu stuff.
Yeah, doing kung fu shit and doing weird fucking bird moves and shit. But he got it down right. He got it right. That's what Elvis was doing. Now, what happened to Elvis is this what I think happened to him. I think the story begins that he hurt a leg or something when he was on stage. He started taking pain pills, and somehow or another he started taking pain pills, and he never stopped taking pain pills. He started taking more and more of them, and he had a bunch of yes men around him who would just give him more and more of what he wanted. That's a bad fucking sign.
Yeah, you never want to have that.
A lot of guys, Prince
happen.
Went down that way, fucking...
Well, anybody, if you get to a sufficient level of fame, you're in danger of that happening to you.
Right.
Because it's, the richer you get, the more famous you get, the more of a bubble you're in, and so the more you only surround yourself with people who only tell you what you want to hear, or, you know, only do what you want to do, and that's not usually a good thing.
I think he died at 41, 42, 40, somewhere around that age.
Who, but Elvis? Well, he was 42, wasn't he?
42, yeah, which is young. All right.
That's, if you're counting, that's 8 years younger than I am.
Yeah. That's almost damn near 15 years younger than I am. Okay.
Yeah, that's more than a decade younger than you are.
Yeah. He was a young man. There was a lot of miles left in Elvis. If you looked at him towards the end of his career, you wouldn't think so, though, because he was just so out of shape. But that happened, like, in that last 2 years.
Yeah.
He wasn't always like that. So the order of events that I've been able to put it together in terms of the complaints that he had, I saw a program that said that he, in his final few years, he kept complaining about joint pain, that his joints felt like they were grinding in his knees and his elbows, and he couldn't get down on a knee to do his little special moves and shit. So he needed more of these pain pills to get it done. And the pain pills helped him put on all that weight, too. And this is what I think happened. He got addicted to those pills. Those pills are always suppressive to fucking natural hormones, including testosterone. But he was able to hold on for a while until he hit about 40. And at 40, I believe that those pills had suppressed his testosterone to the point where he hit kind of like early onset of male menopause, where his fucking test production was probably just down in the fucking dumps. Part of the symptoms of that, though, is that your endocrine system isn't producing a lot of the fluids that keep your joints soft or, you know what I mean, inflated. So that's what he's talking about. There's no test in his fucking system. Had you got him off those fucking pills and banged him up with a bunch of tests, he'd have snapped right back. He'd have been all right. But that's
well, probably should have got him off those painkillers.
Oh yeah, you had to get him off painkillers. But he was taking the painkillers because he was trying to avoid the feelings of, one, withdrawal from them, two, the feelings of fucking having such low testosterone in your system, because that hurts too. So, but that it was just that simple. Bang him up with a bunch of tests. Keep him on his pills. Just bang him up with a bunch of tests. He'll feel a lot better, and then slowly wean him off the damn pills. And then he'd lose all that weight, too. That weight came on because his metabolism would have been at a crawl, you know. His test was so low. No matter what he ate, it would have went right to his fucking waistline. So that, I think that's all it was. And he'd have been good way into his 60s. Shit, look at Mick Jagger. He could have been around forever.
Yeah. I know. Like I said, it's a shame.
Yeah.
Slasher Fred said, one of these days you should do a review of Bye Bye Birdie, which was also inspired by Elvis being drafted in the Army. We should actually really like Bye Bye Birdie. I haven't seen it since high school because we watched it in chorus. But let's see. I thought there was a bunch of other things that I wanted to address.
Elvis, when they said, everybody who knew Elvis and the mob said that when Elvis came back from the Army, he was still Elvis, but that he was a military man after that. And he approached things in a military fashion. He always carried guns on him. All the Memphis mob had guns. They were all deputy sheriffs from all these different counties from a damn cross Tennessee. So they carried guns legally. And fucking Elvis liked fucking 1911 45 autos. And he had a bunch of them. And they were all fucking dressed up and engraved and scroll work and just pimped out. Elvis loved the fucking bling. He had custom made leather holsters for him and all his men, you know, the perfect holsters, all just handcrafted shit, and just, you know, they were into real good guns. And they shot. They said Elvis was really good with a 45. He shot, and he was known for getting fucked up and shooting out televisions too. If he saw something on television that pissed him off, he'd pull his gun out and fucking shoot that television. And then there'd be a brand new television there an hour later. But I guess when you got that kind of money, it doesn't matter. You have the right to shoot a television.
When we were talking about the Vegas thing, TB Drigger said 7 nights a month for the most part. Some nights off, some nights had 2 shows a night. Okay, nights a week. Okay, that's it. That's what I was thinking. I was thinking it was probably like every night for a month. But in the movie, they kind of had it like 6 weeks.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, he agreed to do it for a year because they were like, hey, we can do it, and they'll pay for it because the place had newly opened and they needed a draw. But he's like, okay, but after that I can go to Europe, right? And he's like, yeah, totally, even though he had no intention of, like, letting him go over there. It's just, I don't know, I kind of feel like it does kind of, the movie does kind of make it seem like Colonel Parker, like, prevented him from going. I don't think he could have, like, physically prevented him from going over there, but I kind of feel like he guilted Elvis into not going. Because, like I said, Colonel Parker couldn't go anywhere because he was a fake person. He didn't have any ID. He didn't have a person because he was had been under a false name for, like, a really long time. He, like, emigrated to the U.S., like, illegally because he was Dutch. And so he didn't really have... He joined the army, I think, and he just used the name Tom Parker because it was the first thing he came up with, and that's just who he was. So he didn't really have any, like, fucking history, so he couldn't leave the country because he was afraid he'd get caught. So there was that, too. But I don't know. It just kind of seemed like he was... He couldn't have prevented him, but I can see why Elvis kind of got talked into staying. Hugo said, Bruce Campbell also did Elvis and Bubba Hotep. Yes, he did. Honestly, yeah. I love Bubba Hotep. That's a good movie. That's such a great movie. We did a review of that, like, a long time ago.
That's an Elvis fan fic.
It is.
Yeah.
It's based on a story by Joe R. Lansdale, if you haven't read it. And the story is actually really good. The movie is a pretty close adaptation. Fat Elvis is here and says, we used to make jokes about blue-haired old ladies, but on you it looks good. Well, thanks. I am also a blue-haired old lady. But yeah, so, like I said, if you're not into... I don't think you have to be into Elvis or even know that much about Elvis to enjoy this movie. Because I had a good time with this. It's a fun movie. Like, it's not... There's sad shit in it because, like, his story is ultimately, like, kind of tragic, but... The way it's presented is actually really fun, and the music is great. You know, Austin Butler is fucking amazing as Elvis. Like I said, halfway through the movie, I totally forgot that it was an actor, which that's always a good sign when that happens. Honestly, I can count on one hand the times that's happened for me in a movie. That an actor I recognized... that was playing a kind of an iconic character like that, I forgot that it wasn't, like, the actual person, even though, duh, like, the person's
they're,
dead.
They're in there talking about Elvis. In Elvis's final years, he evidently was, he couldn't have sex. He didn't feel good enough. So what he would do is he'd have one of his friends, he'd see some chick that he liked, and he'd have one of his friends pick her up and have sex with her so he'd get a full report later on what she was like. That was evidently one of the things that Elvis would do. You know you got power when you tell some other people to have sex, give me a full report in the morning.
Have it on my desk at 8 a.m.
Yeah.
Like a book report.
Like a book report, yeah. What she was like, what she looked like.
With her name on the front and the photograph. Yeah.
That's like some shit Elvis would do.
That's kind of weird, though.
Yeah. He was impotent.
TB Drigger said, my girlfriend never cared about Elvis, but loved it as a movie. When I saw it the second time, the audience was full of a mixed bag from old guys to teenagers. Yeah, like I said, I really don't think... I mean, Elvis is just such a ubiquitous cultural figure. I mean, yeah, less so as, like, the years go on, but everybody fucking knows who Elvis is. Even if you know that much about him, you still do kind of know some shit about him. So I kind of feel like even if you really don't know that much about him, you can still watch this and it's still entertaining. You know what I mean?
If you have not seen Elvis and Nixon, see Elvis and Nixon. All right. This is a good movie, too. And you also want to see John Carpenter's Elvis with Kurt Russell.
I mean, this one...
That's a good one, too.
The thing about... Okay, so Elvis and Nixon, I kind of feel like that's more for the Elvis expert. Fans and history buffs.
Yeah.
Because that's a very specific point in time and a very specific event, like, or series of events.
It's just something Elvis did, like, in a period of a few days.
And I think you'll enjoy that one more if you know at least, like, some of the context surrounding it. Yeah. So I do kind of feel like that's maybe a smaller audience. The Elvis biopic that John Carpenter did, which is decent, and it has the Krussell.
Yeah.
That's good if you just kind of want a no-frills...
Basic version.
Just basic, kind of like, this is, like, a pretty accurate summation of Elvis's life and career. This one is what you watch if you just want a, like, a big, entertaining,
style.
Flashy, stylish, You know, because this is, like I said, you don't even have to give a shit about Elvis at all to watch this movie just because it's so beautiful to look at. Yeah. I mean, like I said, if you don't like Baz Luhrmann's style, then I don't know what to tell you, because he does have a very specific over-caffeinated kind of style. Like, everything is, like, very quickly edited, and everything's just kind of like, there's, we're jumping ahead years, we're jumping back years, we're jumping forward years, we're doing this, that, and the other thing. But if you're kind of into that, I mean, I kind of feel like all his movies are like that. So I kind of feel like if you didn't like his other movies, then you probably won't like this one either, because it's also like that. But, I mean, if you liked Moulin Rouge, because I love Moulin Rouge, I kind of wanted, actually watching Elvis last night kind of made me want to watch Moulin Rouge again, even though I've seen it like 5 times. But, or Romeo and Juliet, because that's good too. So if you like those, you'll probably like this as well, because the style is very similar. And honestly, I think that Baz Luhrmann's style, his very kind of like over the top, very blingy style, I think it suits the subject matter very well. I think this was a good match of directorial style with subject matter. And like I said, don't watch it like thinking everything is 100% historically accurate, because it's not, but they didn't take, they took liberties, but not that many liberties. Like, some of the stuff is like exaggerated, or like I said, some of the stuff is moved around a little bit, like in time to make things look a particular way, but not really as much as you might think. He didn't take as many liberties as you might think.
So, I mean, the comment section said that, no, Elvis just got drafted. There wasn't anything behind it. They offered him an entertainment job.
Yeah, that's
and
what
he
I
said,
thought.
No, he wanted to do real
that's
stuff.
What I thought.
And that matches up with everything that I've heard about Elvis, and that matches up with Southern culture. He's just a, that's just part of Southern culture. It's a manly thing to do. You do your duty. You did your time. He did his 2 years. He was supposed to be a model soldier. Everybody liked him. He was very popular and was a good NCO and got out. And it stuck with him. Elvis wanted to be a secret agent after that. That's what that Nixon movie's about. You'd like it. Yeah, Elvis saw himself as a military man.
I mean, the thing about this movie, like I said, it doesn't come out and explicitly say that, you know, he went into the army because otherwise he was going to get in trouble for all of the, you know, all of the sexual stuff that he was doing, like on stage and whatnot. It doesn't come out and say that, but the way that it's edited does kind of imply that that was how it happened. But it does say that he got drafted, because they have like him dropping the thing that like the draft notice, like that says drafted on it. And then them kind of like talking about it. But yeah, so it's like, I don't feel, it's a little bit deceptive, like, the way they do it in the movie, but not, you could read it, like, either way. They don't, like, explicitly come out and say, oh, he went to the army, or he got drafted specifically because, you know, they were mad at him because he was, like, corrupting the morals of the youth of America.
It kind of leads you to believe that. It kind of leads you to believe that, but
I will say that they asked Lisa Marie Presley what she thought of this movie, because she got to go to a screening and everything like that. She thought it was fucking fantastic.
Okay. Yeah.
She thought it was great. She thought Austin Butler was amazing. She said he really captured like the essence of her dad, which I agree. I mean, I don't know. I didn't watch the Oscars I kind of like looked at who won, but I forgot. And if he wasn't nominated, that's sad, because he was amazing in this. Now, I will say, I love Tom Hanks. I don't know if I liked him as Colonel Parker, though. I kind of feel like I wish that they had got a less recognizable actor, like a less famous actor.
I don't know, man. Tom Hanks pulled that scumbag off, I'm going to say.
He did, which is weird, because he doesn't play villains a lot. No. This isn't the first time he's played a villain.
He comes like, off as just a scumbag.
He's played villains in other movies, but not that many. He's usually like a good guy.
And he's not an over-the-top fucking scumbag. He's just a dude who thinks he's doing the right thing, but you know everything he does is duplicitous. And he's just a duplicitous motherfucker.
And he seems kind of aware of that, but he's like okay with it.
Yeah.
He's made peace with how shady
he is. He's basically saying, I'm not a parasite, I'm a symbiote. Okay?
He
needs me. We need each other. That's what he's saying.
Yeah. That's the thing. But one thing that I've heard some people complain about is that if you haven't seen the movie, Tom Hanks does, I guess, an approximation of like a Dutch accent. Because now the guy, like Colonel Parker, was Dutch, okay? But I don't think that Colonel Parker, I haven't seen like a lot of footage of the real Colonel Parker, but he didn't have a Dutch accent, did
he? Probably would
have
had a southern accent indistinguishable from any other redneck down in there.
Probably see, like I don't know. Like I said, it's been a while since I saw any real footage of Colonel Parker, but I don't remember him having a Dutch accent. No. But Tom Hanks does have kind of like a Dutch-sounding accent in this movie, and I think they could have done without that.
Probably would have sounded like any other cracker, like fucking, like Colonel Sanders. Probably sounded just like that.
Yeah, and honestly, you'd think that him being a carny, you'd think that he
could
would
do any kind of accent.
Even if he didn't really talk like that, once he was approaching it. Elvis and like getting in that game, he would have started talking like that.
Sure.
Also, I think this movie too, like, because I meant to mention this a long time ago, showed there was like a super super close friendship between Elvis and B.B. King, which. They knew each other, I don't know if they, like, they weren't as close as they appeared in this movie, but they did know each other, though.
Yeah.
So I don't know how accurate that stuff is, but...
The only time, the most famous mention I've ever heard about Elvis and some of the black artists was James Brown. Evidently, He really liked James Brown, and Brown went to Graceland several times, and evidently they were planning on doing some kind of a musical project together when he died. You know, something in the works that they had. That'd have been interesting.
James Brown. It would have been, yeah.
Maybe I don't know if that was going to be something that at the International, or that'd have been, you know.
Yeah, because they didn't bring James Brown up in this.
But evidently James Brown lost it at the funeral. He was at the funeral.
Oh.
Fucking asked for he got time alone and everything with the casket and fucking lost it. Those two were a lot alike. James Brown and Elvis were a lot alike. They were both Southern Republicans, and they had the unity vision and everything, and it was very Southern centric. They liked gospel. They kind of came up with church kind of background, church choir backgrounds. They were a lot alike. They were both very alpha too. There needs to be a movie about James Brown. James Brown was fucking interesting. They say he was tough as nails too.
I mean, you'd think in this era that there has been one.
Yeah.
And somebody will probably tell me, Jenny, there's been like five of them. Where have you been?
I haven't seen any good James Brown fucking movies appear out of nowhere like this one. You know, like it's like they think the market isn't there. But I bet you James, because he did Bohemian Rhapsody and stuff. But no, I think James Brown would make a good topic.
I can think of a lot of musicians that would make like real. And, you know, it's coming from me. It's probably going to be like niche market kind of stuff. Yeah. But I mean, honestly, even musicians that I'm not that super into, I like musical biopics. I'm just, you know, sue me. Even if it's a band, shit, I'll even watch musical like documentaries about bands I don't even like all that much.
Yeah.
Just because, I don't know, it's just interesting. I find it interesting. But I'm not saying that because I really do like Elvis, but I don't know. I thought this was like a really, really good movie. I kind of feel like the movie, I don't know, I didn't really get a read on how the reviews were going because I know it's been out of the theater for a little while. Like I said, I think it's still playing at like some of the cheaper movies, but we watched it on, or the cheaper theaters, we watched it on HBO Max. I kind of got the sense that when it first came out that it was sort of getting like slightly negative reviews at first, but then, I don't know, it seemed like 75-85% of the reviews were positive. Especially because of Austin Butler, who the crazy thing about this, Austin Butler, I think he's been in some other shit, but I think this is like his first big movie. I mean, I don't think he's been in anything like substantial like prior to this. And man, I was really impressed. I'm just saying. He fucking poured himself. He committed. He committed to this shit. And I thought he was fucking great. I don't know if that's his singing voice. I don't know. Or if they had somebody else sing for him. But it doesn't really, I mean, if it's you know, lip syncing or whatever, it looked really good. They just did a really good job. And honestly, like, I liked this. I think I liked this as much as I liked Bohemian Rhapsody. And I liked Bohemian Rhapsody quite a lot.
Yeah, it was good too.
I also like Bohemian.
Yeah, they're on par.
Bohemian Rhapsody was more a standard biopic. in the sense of, because, you know, biopics, musical biopics particularly, usually have a template that they follow. Like I said, I like them, so I'm not shitting on them by saying that. But Bohemian Rhapsody was great because I, you know, I like Freddie Mercury and I really like that subject matter. And it was an interesting take on his life. But it was kind of like a standard narrative, like a standard musical biopic narrative. This one kind of was, but then it had kind of just like style for days. You know what I mean? And whether you like Baz Luhrmann's style or not, that's entirely up to you. But if you do, then man, this is all over. Because even I was like, even watching the end credits going, oh my God, even the end credits have bling all over the sides and everything like that. Like there's, you know, the end credits are scrolling and there's like all this gold like shit on the side and everything like that. I'm like, oh my God, I love it. I love it. They committed to that fucking aesthetic, man. And I was into it. TB Jerker said apparently he had trouble talking normal for a while after the movie. And the thing about it is that at no point did I ever feel as though he was doing an impression or that he was doing a voice or doing the Elvis shtick or anything like that. He just came across like a person. He came across like Elvis. You know what I mean? He didn't. That's the thing about playing Elvis. It's got to be one of the hardest things for an actor to do because anything that you do, if you go too far into it, it's almost kind of like doing like William Shatner or somebody that somebody that's like really distinctive or has a lot of distinctive moves or a very distinctive voice. If you do, if you go just that much a little bit too into it, then it's going to seem like a parody. Yeah. You're going to seem like you're doing an impression and it's going to seem, you know, inauthentic. At no point did I ever feel that with Austin Butler in this. He just seems totally embodied. It doesn't seem like he's doing any kind of, like, parody type of thing or any kind of... He's not doing Elvis the shtick, you know what I mean? He's not doing that. He's just being a person that happens to be Elvis. And I don't know. I just thought it was great. I thought it was great. You all right?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
About time for us to get something to eat, though.
I guess so. Holy shit, we've been going on for more than an hour.
Yeah.
I thought
we covered this bitch. We covered it.
We covered it.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's on HBO Max. Like I said, I think it's still in theaters, like at some cheap theaters I saw when I looked it up earlier. But like I said, if you're not real into like over the top, real flashy, like Baz Luhrmann's other stuff, then you'll probably hate it. But other than that, I would recommend it. I thought it was great because I like Baz Luhrmann. So, you know what I mean? But yeah, I liked it a lot. Okay, so tomorrow is Monday, which means that it's a Haunting Mondays. So we're going to be talking about an episode of Haunting. Let's do, do you want to do The Calling?
Yeah.
Okay. That was the one we were going to do because somebody recommended that one before. And that was the one that I thought was the one that we did last week that was called Demon's Revenge or whatever the fuck. So we'll do The Calling, which I think is season 4, episode 3, or season 3, episode 4. I'm not entirely sure, but it's one of those two things, I'm pretty sure. So unless if something changes, I'll post it, and I'll post it anyway, but I'm pretty sure we're going to talk about The Calling tomorrow. So if you want to watch that episode before we talk about it tomorrow, then feel free to do that. So have a good rest of your weekend, you guys, and we will see you again tomorrow evening. Good night.